And in this presentation, I want to talk about acceptance for value. And I'll do the best introduction that I can in the next 20 minutes or so. By the time you get to this presentation, you should have some prerequisites under your belt. You should have studied commercial law, understand what commercial law is all about. You should know the difference between the United States, capital U, capital S, two-word pronoun, versus the small u, United States of America, as in the Republic. Two different entities altogether. You should understand already a little bit about what is done with the birth certificate, how that is securitized and used. And all this information is available in the commercial law page found on the menu in the members section. And there's a couple of items on the Basecamp page as you first log in. Okay, so I'm going to presume you've been through that and you understand a few things. All right, if not, you might get lost on a couple of these items. But I'm going to try and take it as quick as I can. So let's go. You can go on the internet, go to YouTube, and you will find, if you haven't already, a ton of videos on AFV, A number 4V, short for acceptance for value. And what you're going to find, in 95% of the cases, you'll see people on there saying, yippee-yi-ki-yay, this worked for me. This is the greatest thing since sliced bread. Then you're going to see some guy say, this is a bunch of BS. It doesn't work. It's just full of crap. I tried everything and it didn't work for me. And what you're looking at is videos from some guys off the street that were out on the internet looking to buy a magic trick in a box and probably didn't understand the first thing about it. And for those that worked, why did it work? Because it has sound basis in law. For those that it didn't work for, why did it not work for them? Because they don't understand the process and they don't know how to enforce it. Does this process work every time? Yes, it does work every time, provided, and this is the caveat, that you are able to enforce it. All right, having said that, that should tell you pretty directly that it does not work every single time to the extent that the debtors that you're dealing with are just going to roll over and say, hey, bud, yeah, whatever you say, whatever you want, you're the king, you're the man, whatever, okay? Not everybody's going to roll over, all right? So you got to know your stuff. You have to understand the basis. If you're ever standing up in front of a judge or a creditor, you need to know the program, all right? So I want to give you some of the basics here, and hopefully you can take some notes and use that as some building blocks to build from, all right? The first thing we need to understand is that you, as the private man or woman, as an individual, you understand, as a person upon the land, I don't want to use that word person, but as an individual, a man or woman upon the land, your name is spelled in upper and lower case. All right, you understand by now, I hope, that where you see your name in all uppercase, that's a completely different legal person that has been created by virtue of your birth certificate. I'm not going to rehash that now. You should know that. Let's say, just for conversation as I go through here, let's say your name is John, and we'll use that for reference. So we have to understand that the private man or woman takes his or her labor as an asset into the public. Okay, your labor, your life, as an individual, is private. You're upon the land, living a private life, okay? Once you take your labor, which is an asset, it's a sacred asset as defined in the Supreme Court numerous times, It's inviolable. You have a right to your labor that's inviolable, and nobody can impose upon that. All right, that's an asset that you will now take from the private realm, where you live upon the land, in common law, among the several states, in the republic. You will now take that from the private realm into the public realm. That's the realm where the United States government exists and operates. Okay? So, by taking your private asset and moving it into the public realm, the question is, well, how does that happen? How did I take it from private to public? Well, you're operating as the trustee for the trust, which is your name in all capital letters. Okay, that's not you, the individual. We're dealing with two legal persons. Okay, again, I hope you understand that. So, when you take your private property into the public realm by virtue of working as a job, for a corporation, working for the government, working in any capacity where you are distinctly recognized as John in all capital letters, the legal person, that's the public realm. Okay? So, there's a misconception that the government creates money, but this is not the case. Only you and I and other people who are capable of labor can create money. All right? The fact that the government might strike coins or print notes to be used as a medium of exchange is not the issue. The government doesn't print money just out of thin air like everybody talks about. Okay? You create the money by virtue of your labor and thus extracting public debt instruments for your private labor. Okay, so you see how that exchange happens? You're exchanging your private labor for public debt instruments, Federal Reserve notes, which are referred to inaccurately as money. Okay, so that's the crossover that happens. All right, so the only value that the money has is the value of the labor that was used to generate it. Now, if you haven't gotten to the finance and bank fraud section yet, you will learn that the loan that you ask for from the bank was created from the money you created when you signed the promissory note. When you signed that promissory note, you created a negotiable instrument, a debt instrument, which is commercial in nature and which is, in fact, the currency that we use today. Okay? So, again, the real issue is that the value of the currency is only that which can be equated to the labor that you've actually put into it. Okay? That's the only true capital, is the labor. And so this is the basis of all commercial energy. Think of commerce as an electric circuit, okay? And this is really fundamental to the whole acceptance for value process. The basis of the commercial energy is a bond which is issued from you, the private man, and is complete with the surety, okay? What is that bond? We go back to the birth certificate, and the surety is the insurance, which is the social security scheme. Okay, that's the insurance contract. So, withholdings are taken out for social security, put into a fund supposedly for your future use, which is robbed and stolen by Congress critters, but that's another story. Okay, so... So when taken into the public realm from the private side, this energy or your labor is converted into an accounting system so that we can demonstrate equity. In other words, equity being that you've received something in return for your labor. So that compensation is the money value equating to your labor. Okay, so it's pretty simple. Pretty simple in that respect. So... the question comes up, people talking about your name, John, in all capital letters versus your name John in upper and lower case. And some people say, oh, that's just crazy. I mean, what's your authority to back you up on that? Well, one source to support that is we can look at the United States Government Printing Office Style Manual. In the Printing Office Style Manual, section 11.7, it says, the names of vessels are quoted in matters printed in other than lowercase Roman, end quote. So let's review that. Names of vessels are quoted in matters printed in other than lowercase Roman. So what is other than lowercase Roman? The only option is uppercase Roman, right? Okay. In other words, and I love the legalese, you know, they beat around the bush so many different ways. They could just say the names of vessels are quoted in all capital letters. Okay, but they hide it. They obfuscate what they're trying to say so that many people won't catch on. So anyway, that's the authority. Names of vessels are quoted in all capital letters. Printing Office Style Manual, section 11.7. Now, what's a vessel? A vessel of the United States has been defined in the U.S. Code, Title 18, Section 9. Vessels of the United States defined. The term vessel of the United States, again, capital U, capital S, we're talking about the corporate person, legal person, as used in this title, means a vessel belonging in whole or in part to the United States, or any citizen thereof, U.S. citizen, or any corporation created by or under the laws of the United States, or any state or territory or district or possession. Okay? So, in short, the term vessel of the United States, as used in this title, means a vessel belonging in whole or in part to the United States. All right? I mentioned previously that insurance is the Social Security scheme, and that's under admiralty law. And so we can look at the authority on Benedict on Admiralty as the source, and Section Admiralty Law, Title 22, in Foreign Relations, Subchapter 1, Shipping and Seamen, Part 81. Also found in Title 22 of the Code of Federal Regulations, Section 81.1. Okay? Definition. B. American vessel means any United States-owned vessel which is not registered under the laws of a foreign government. Vessels of the United States and American undocumented vessels. Okay? Notice how they make a distinction between United States and American. That should tell you something right there, doesn't it? Definition C. American public vessel means any vessel owned or operated by a United States government department or agency engaged in official business. Okay? And they go on to several other definitions. I'm not going to read them all. But it's very clear what a vessel of the United States is. And if the U.S. Government Printing Office Style Manual indicates that your name in all capital letters or any name in all capital letters is relating to vessels, then we can see that by these definitions that I've just referred to, we're dealing in admiralty law. What is admiralty law? Admiralty law is the law of the seas. The law of the seas basically means that the captain rules on his ship. The captain is king on his ship. He can make summary judgments. Whatever he says goes. It's pretty much equivalent to chancery courts. That's C-H-A-N-C-E-R-Y. Chancery courts is the king's court. The king's court basically goes by the rules of the king, which are whatever he says is the rule. Okay? So in chancery courts, there are no rules. It's pretty much whatever the king says. When you're in admiralty, it's quite interesting that you're basically bound by contract. Everybody on board that ship enters that ship with a contract, with the captain. That's very clear on the terms and conditions for boarding the ship and maintaining a presence on the ship. And any violation of that contract, and you're walking the plank and you're overboard, okay? Without discussion. It's up to the captain. So let's look at, and I'll get through these citations here pretty quick and get into some concepts which will continue on this in a perhaps a more comprehensive manner. But if we look at the Code of Federal Regulations, Title 22, Section 81.3, Status of Vessels of the United States. This is interesting. Vessels documented under the laws of the United States are entitled to privileges and subject to the obligations prescribed by the laws of the United States for merchant vessels. Okay? Now, does that say, here, let me just complete this. The type of privileges and obligations appertaining to such vessels depends upon the form and the purpose of their documentation. Okay, so in admiralty, if you are a vessel operating in admiralty, then you are entitled to privileges and subject to the obligations prescribed by the laws, which are in turn governed by whatever contract, terms of contracts that you entered into under those laws. Okay? Terms of contracts, we could be talking about Social Security, veterans' benefits, welfare, unemployment benefits. All of those have application forms, terms of and conditions, and assumptions and presumptions. And as you enter into those contracts, you're subject to the captain. You are the vessel of the United States. Now notice that when they say you're entitled to privileges and subject to the obligations prescribed by the laws of the U.S., they don't talk at all about any rights, do they? They don't say, well, subject to your rights and constitutional protections and things like that. No, there's no place for that at all here. So people that go into admiralty courts with a yellow fringe flag, that's a maritime court, Admiralty Maritime, and that's defined in Title 5 of the U.S. Code. Look for the section on flags. When I looked at it last, the clarification was found in the footnotes as to what the yellow fringed flag represents. Again, some people are naysayers, and, oh, that's just a bunch of crap. It's in Title 5 of the U.S. Code, okay? So, point being that as a vessel of the United States operating in all capital letters, that vessel has no rights, has no constitutional protections. It simply has some privileges which are subject to the obligations of the contracts, okay? So it's important that you understand the context that we're going to be talking about in acceptance for value. Forget about common law, your rights, Constitution, all that crap. That's why when you bring these items up in the courtroom, the judge just shuts you down and tells you, if you don't stop talking about that, I'm going to hold you in contempt and throw you in jail. Why? Because you're in an admiralty court, and that there's no place in an admiralty court for your rights, okay? So you don't understand the rules if you're doing that, all right? Those are patriot arguments that just label you as such and will give you a short ticket. You know, you'll be leaving the courtroom through the side door and not the front door. I think you understand me there. So here, Title 22 of the CFRs, again, Code of Federal Regulations, 81.4, Status of American Undocumented Vessels. American undocumented vessels are not under the jurisdiction of the United States. Okay, so if it's determined that you are an American, not United States, undocumented vessel, not a documented vessel, i.e. all capital names with social security number, what they're saying is you're not under the jurisdiction of the United States and consequently are not subject to the obligations, nor are you entitled to the protection, which are accorded vessels of the United States abroad. Abroad could be Georgia, all right, foreign to the United States, 10 square miles of Washington, D.C., legally foreign, all right? However, such vessels are entitled to the same degree of protection accorded any other property abroad owned by United States citizens, all right? So let's look for corroboration of this term vessel. We're talking a lot about that. Let's corroborate this in the Bible. This term is used in the Bible. And so let me quote directly from 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 20 and 21. Quote, "But in a great house there are not only vessels of gold and of silver, but also of wood and of earth, and some to honor and some to dishonor. If a man therefore purge himself from these, he shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified, and meet for the master's use, and prepared unto every good work." End quote. Interesting. You can read that for yourself and come to your own conclusions, but I find it interesting that they say, if a man therefore purge himself from these, some of honor, some of dishonor, wood, earth, gold, silver, and if you purge yourself of these, from these, you shall be a vessel unto honor, sanctified. Interesting. So, generally a vessel is a conveyance, something which conveys something. Your blood vessels convey blood to the body. Ocean-going vessels convey cargo across the water from land to land. And your name in all caps, John, conveys commercial energy from the private side, which is your labor, the man doing the labor. It conveys this energy to the public side, where you are known as John in all caps, and you start in the accounting system with public debt instruments. Okay? Now, if we were to look at the UCC-1 financing statement, which is a form, just a blank form, you can get at the county recorder's office or just online, UCC-1 financing statement, you'll see that there is a section there that allows you to check the box if the debtor is a transmitting utility. And I find it very interesting and helpful to understand when you look at commerce as nothing more than an electrical circuit, as I mentioned before. What is a transmitting utility? Well, that's your electric power station that transmits electricity, right? It transmits power, energy, puts out energy into the system. Well, you, as the private man or woman, through your labor, entering into the public side by creating accounting, you have created current or currency into the system, and it is following a circuit. Okay, so you become a transmitting utility. See how that correlation works? It's fascinating. So the vessel, John in all capital letters, is created by the government, the corporate entity. It belongs to them. But the man, you the individual, becomes obligated by the use of the benefit or privilege which is offered by the creator of the trust, which is the government. Government created that trust with your birth certificate. Your name in all caps, you became the vessel. Or that became the vessel. You became a trustee. So in other words, you, John, the individual, the man upon the earth, becomes liable by using the John vessel all caps, the transmitting utility. All right, so by using that and receiving benefits, you become liable to the obligations of the contract in admiralty that we just talked about a minute ago. Okay, so you see how that comes together. I know if you're not paying close attention, you're going to get lost and confused. This is a mind bender, okay? So you got to pay close attention. All right, so in order to collect on the liability for the use of the vessel, the corporation sends John the man a bill by sending a presentment or an invoice to John in the name of the trust. You don't know the difference. You accept it and just operate it just as though it were you, unknowing that it's actually being presented to the legal person, the trust. Okay? So let's look at UCC section 3-501. Part 1 says the presentment is necessary to charge secondary parties. What happens when you get a bill? You get charged, right? You get charged a certain amount of currency to effect a payment, okay? You can't pay anything because we're operating in bankruptcy. There is no money in circulation to lawfully pay a debt. All you can do is effect a payment. So UCC 3-501 deals with the presentment which is necessary to charge secondary parties as follows. In paragraph B, it says the presentment for payment is necessary to charge any endorser. So what's that presentment? The presentment is the bill. Okay? The bill includes the charge for the vessel to pay, to effect a payment. All right? So this presentment creates an implied trust. And this is separate and distinct from any other trusts. It's called a resulting trust. We've got a very detailed analysis of all of this in some of the materials in the Daddy Warbucks package. Okay, I'm just referring to some notes that I pulled out from that. So let's take a look at the resulting trust, and you can see who the parties are and how that works. Okay, a resulting trust is created by the presentment of some bill to the surety for the vessel John, in all capital letters. Who is the surety? You, the man, John in upper and lower case, are the surety for John, the vessel of the United States. So this resulting trust that occurs by default, just by operation of law, the trustor, which would be the party funding the trust or granting assets into the trust, would be the holder of the application. So that would be you if you applied for Social Security benefits on your SS4 form or applied for any other benefits. Okay, you are the trustor because you're going to be granting your assets, labor, to initiate the creation of this trust. The trustee is John, you in upper and lower case. I'm sorry, I might have been a little confusing. Let me backtrack just a minute here. The trustor, being the holder of the application, could very well be a creditor. You applied for services from the cable company, and they're holding that application. They become a holder in due course in commercial law. Okay, so they're the holder of due course. The trustee of the vessel is yourself, the man, upper and lower case. The beneficiary would be the corporation who provided the benefit or privilege. Well, let's just talk in terms of the cable company. Okay, how does a cable company get the benefit or privilege out of this trust arrangement? Well, all corporations operate with currency. They are formed, built, developed, operate, and grow in this electrical circuit based on energy and current from the transmitting utility. All right? That current is the currency. How does that currency come into existence? Through your labor. All right? So you become sponsor of the credit. They then, the corporations, become beneficiaries of this resulting trust. They are provided the benefit or the privilege of the use of the currency that you have entered into the system. Okay, so is it starting to make a little bit of sense? I'm not going to get into a whole lot of detail on that. But again, you have to understand that the United States is operating in bankruptcy. And there is no money to pay debt. All we deal in is negotiable instruments under commercial law, the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code. And this is all supported by the UCC. So let's get right to acceptance for value. This process is something that's done by the trustee of this resulting trust. All right? Remember who the trustee is? That's you, the man upon the land, John, in upper and lower case. So acceptance for value is a process done by you as the trustee of this trust, and it is a private administrative remedy. It's a private administrative remedy. All right? And acceptance, in commercial terminology, means that I will pay. Or in our case, because we're in bankruptcy, I will effect payment. So we have to stay in honor in public policy under the bankruptcy as trustee of the resulting trust by effecting payment. Okay? If you refuse payment, you are in dishonor. You are in dishonor of public policy, and there could be consequences. Okay? So we don't dishonor presentments in the public. We must accept them. Acceptance for value. We have to honor those presentments to stay within public policy. This goes to offer and acceptance. If a public offer is made and it's accepted, the offerer must produce the product of his offer within 72 hours or within 3 days following the receipt of the accepted offer. Okay? And so in our materials, we have sample acceptance letters that you can use. What's fascinating is that the acceptance for value process works on both financial charges, bills, taxes, invoices, including charges to pay, and it also works on criminal charges. Think of all of these charges, financial and criminal, or commercial and criminal. Again, using the electricity analogy. If you simply put up a resistor and close the circuit, that electricity is going to blow something out or melt something down. There's going to be damaging consequences. All right. However, if you maintain that circuit and keep it open and keep that charge, commercial or criminal, flowing, it won't hurt you. It'll simply pass right through. Keep that in mind, and you'll see what I mean when we get into the details on this. Okay? So the acceptance for value documents becomes a promise to pay or a promissory note. If the presenter of the charge, the company who's sending you a bill, or the county who is making charges against you, if that presenter to whom we have returned the accepted bill goes into default, shouldn't we be entitled to summary judgment? Aren't we entitled to a levy on the bond and the surety of the dishonoring presenter? Okay, in other words, there is recourse. In the law, if your process is not honored, okay? So, let's shift gears a little bit. Let's go to the concept that all manufactured goods are funded from the good faith and credit of the people. Okay, what does it say in your Federal Reserve note? Backed by the credit and faith of the United States. And if you are a U.S. citizen, that means you. Okay, so that Federal Reserve note is backed by the good faith and credit of the people. All right, again, if all corporate development and resulting manufactured goods and services are funded from your good faith and credit, that means you are a sponsor of the credit. And remember the trust? They are receiving benefits from that which you created. So when you receive a bill for a product that you've used, and they didn't send a check enclosed or a replevin bond, which is to recover your property, a replevin bond to put up or retain possession of the check with which to pay the bill, the amount of that presentment or bill is actually being withheld from you. Okay, don't get confused. Remember in commerce that whoever creates a liability in the public must provide the remedy. And that goes to our double entry bookkeeping system. If you know anything about accounting, don't worry if you don't. I'll explain it real simple. Double entry accounting simply means that whenever you put an asset on the books, you also have to put an equal liability. So things balance out. Okay? So you got so many assets in the credit column and so many assets in the same amount in the debit column. Debits and credits, assets and liabilities. Okay, so in this case, we're talking about the corporation that you've used their goods or services sends you a bill. They are creating a liability. And so whoever creates a liability in commerce in the public must also provide the remedy to honor public policy and to honor double entry bookkeeping. Okay? So let me just try and summarize a little bit here for you so we can tie this all together, because I know it's a little bit of a brain bender. One thing we need to understand is that any and all public corporations are essentially joined as one and are the same. So if we're dealing with the United States, all capital letters, U.S., if we're talking about your vessel, John Smith, in all capital letters, if we're dealing with IBM, if we're dealing with Apple, whatever corporation you can think of, they are all basically the same entity because they're created with the same energy, the same credit, and they're all vessels or sub-vessels under the United States. Okay? They're all participants of this system under the United States, and so they're all essentially one and the same. So everything that is created by public corporations, products and services, is a public offer to the beneficiary of the public trust. When the beneficiary accepts that offer from the offerer, and the offerer sends the beneficiary a bill, you being the beneficiary, you're the beneficiary of the service or the product, right? Okay? So when you accept their offer, and the offeror sends you a bill for the account, instead of settling it using your pass-through account, which is your bond created by the birth certificate and numbered with your social security number and the vessel's name in all capital letters, they're basically guilty of a bait and switch. How does that happen? Because it's an underhanded attempt to steal equity, which is your cash. They're asking you for cash, which represents your labor, when in fact your pass-through account is available for them to offset and balance their books. All right, so they've got two ways they can pay for that. They can go to your bond, which is in the vessel name and social security number, and they can settle accounts there, or they can send you a bill and demand more equity. You've already given them equity by creating the credit. Now they want more equity, which is more cash, which you've worked again for, so you're actually paying double. Okay? So that's an underhanded attempt to steal equity from the rightful owner of the benefit. Okay? You own the benefit that the corporation gave you because you created the credit to begin with. You follow me here? It's a little bit hard to digest because it's so foreign to what we've believed all of our lives. No one's ever explained this to us, okay? So I know you might have to go back and listen to this again, but it should make sense to you once you go through it a time or two, okay? So anyway, whatever their motive is for asking for your cash, it's really not important to what's going on, okay? And you have to remember that a fiction, a corporation, is set up exclusively to benefit a person. I'm sorry, a man. Slap me. So a man is the beneficiary of these fictional entities called corporations. And so if the fiction refuses to provide the benefit to you, the man, then the corporation is in breach of its fiduciary obligation. Okay? So, again, in trust terms, a man in this trust scenario is the trustor or grantor. You created the labor, which created the credit that put energy into the trust. Okay? A corporation is the trustee or fiduciary of this trust because they are managing it on behalf of the trustor or grantor. All right, so the corporation has a fiduciary responsibility to manage that credit which you have entered into the public system, and then as a result, you as an individual, living and breathing person, are the beneficiary. Okay? So you created the credit. The corporations have a fiduciary responsibility to manage it and produce with it. Therefore, they're doing that in a fiduciary capacity for you, the beneficiary, so that that you can have the benefits. All right? So when they present a bill without a check or a replevin bond, what I'm saying is when they present a bill to pay, they need to send you a check to pay it with. I know that seems a bit odd, but again, double entry bookkeeping. If they are creating a liability, they have to also provide the remedy. All right? They've had the benefit of your credit, and you are the beneficiary entitled to that which they produce. They're double dipping if they're asking you to pay with more cash and more labor. Okay? So, the sponsor of the credit, you, who created the funds for the establishment and funding of the corporation, can assess the corporation for any illegal withholding of the remedy for the public debt. And under Chapter 11, the debtor is in possession. Or the debtor in possession, that's a commercial term, debtor in possession of the instrument, has the obligation to run the Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which we're all under, as the trustee. And if the trustee fails its fiduciary responsibilities, then the trustee or the debtor in possession will have to make it right. Okay? So what we do is when they send a bill, the bottom line is the paperwork is real simple. It's real simple to do. Cover letter with accounting instructions, which can be provided. We'll get into the specifics and the how-to in a different session. But what we're doing with the acceptance for value, to sum it all up, is we are honoring the charge. We're returning it back to the offeror. We're giving them permission to offset the charge and complete the circuit by accessing your bond. I'm sorry, the bond that you manage for the vessel, your name in all capital letters, with a social security number, and it is there through that account. That's your pass-through account. It's from there that they can settle the charge. And so the charge passes through you, it completes the circuit, goes to the pass-through account, which is created by the bond for your vessel, and that payment is effected and comes back to them, or they can settle their books. Okay? So we complete the circuit. They send a charge to you. You honor their request. You accept it for value. You send it back to them as a promise to pay. That bill, which you have accepted, now becomes a negotiable instrument, which they can then present to the bondholder, which is the United States, and they can settle their accounts. Okay? People are doing this all over the country. They're paying taxes, paying corporate bills, telephone bills, county taxes, cable bills, mortgages, and they're dealing with criminal charges as well. Personally, I haven't used this myself simply because I've never had any debt to deal with, and I've been studying this intently. I find it intensely fascinating, and hopefully you've got a little bit of an idea what the premise is, and in our Daddy Warbucks package and support package and the membership upgrade, you will have folders full of documents and samples and detailed history and explanations, which will hopefully really take your dim light bulb that you have right now and turn it into a burning lighthouse on a rock somewhere. So I hope that helps a little bit, and I haven't thoroughly confused you, but let's build off of that, and let's use it to pay off your debts, shall we? All right, take care and God bless.